Welcome back to the deep dive. Okay, I want you to close your eyes for a second.
Okay.
No, it's easy. Unless you're driving, please don't close your eyes if you're driving.
Yeah.
But imagine walking into a standard American high school cafeteria right now.
Okay.
It's February 2026. You push open those big double doors, you get that, that smell of floor wax and pizza, and you expect that wall of noise.
Right, chaos.
But if you're in one of about 30 states right now, you might notice something is, well, missing.
And it's not the noise level, right? Teenagers are still loud. It's something you see.
Exactly. It's the posture, that head tilt, the one, shoulders hunched, neck bent, the soft glow of a screen on their chin.
It's gone.
It's gone, or at least it's fading fast. We aren't talking about a new curriculum today or budget cuts. We are talking about the massive nationwide wave of cell phone bans that has absolutely swept U.S. schools this year.
It really has been the defining story of this school year. And it feels like it happened overnight, doesn't it?
It really does.
But the data we have, it shows this has been building for a long time. It's
Yeah.
just, it finally reached a tipping point.
And that is exactly what we are digging into today. We've got a huge stack of reports here, state legislation, parent guides, some really specific data on special needs safety. We're going to figure out why this is happening now, look at the surprising impact it's having on student anxiety, and then
That we have to talk about the big one.
the safety gap. Because when you take those phones away, a lot of parents start to panic.
And justifiably so. We've built our entire lives around that connectivity.
So let's start with the scale of this. You said this was building. I remember hearing about a few districts trying this years ago.
Isolated experiments.
Yeah, private schools, maybe some small rural districts.
Yeah.
But now it feels like a mandate. What tipped the scales? Why now?
It's a combination of factors, but if you look at the documents coming out of these districts, the motivation has actually shifted. A few years ago, the whole argument was about classroom management.
Just teachers being tired of competing with TikTok.
Exactly. They were just exhausted from saying, put it away 50 times a period.
Which is fair. I mean, I can't imagine trying to teach algebra while 30 kids are doom scrolling.
And that's still true, of course. But the main drivers now are, they're much heavier, more systemic.
Yeah.
It's about limiting social media pressure, reducing cyberbullying, and, forcing actual face-to-face interaction.
The look-up movement.
Literally, the data suggests we're seeing a generation that is losing the soft skills of conversation because they communicate almost entirely through text and snaps.
Right. But, there's a piece of context here I think it's missed. We tend to think this is a uniquely American thing.
Oh, absolutely. But we are actually playing catch-up.
Catch up to who?
The rest of the world. We have data here from The Economist showing that globally, something like 40% of national education systems have already enacted or are in the process of enacting these bans.
40%.
40%. France, parts of China, the UK, the Netherlands. This is a global referendum on the smartphone in the classroom.
Wow. So we aren't just some puritanical outlier. We're joining a global trend. But here's my question. The school boards love it. The teachers, I'm sure, are thrilled. But what about the parents? Because if you try to take a phone away from my niece, it is World War III, and her parents want to be able to reach her.
You'd think it would be a total battleground, but the Pew Research numbers we have are surprisingly lopsided.
Really?
Public sentiment is incredibly high in favor of restrictions. We're talking 74% of adults.
74% in this political climate. You can't get 74% of Americans to agree that puppies are cute.
I know, right? It's a landslide. But, and this is the key, you have to look at the nuance in that number.
Sure.
That 74% supports bans during class. Put it away while you're doing geometry.
Okay, that seems reasonable.
But if you ask those same parents, should we ban phones from school grounds entirely? Leave it at home, lock it in a pouch all day.
The number drops.
It plummets down to 44%.
and that's the friction point. That's the drop off. I want my kid to learn, but I want them to have that phone in their pocket just in case.
Precisely. And that's where it gets messy.
Oh.
But before we get to the parental anxiety, I want to touch on one specific reason for these bans that I think is the most fascinating and frankly, kind of disturbing.
Okay.
It's the surveillance factor.
Surveillance, you mean like the school spying on kids?
No, the other way around. Kids spying on kids, or rather, recording each other. This came up in several of the district reports. We think of the phone as a distraction device, like a Game Boy. But for a teenager today, a phone is a broadcast camera in their pocket all the time.
Oh, I see where you're going with this.
Think about the social dynamic of a high school. If everyone has a camera, you are constantly on air. Students are recording classmates doing goofy things, making a mistake, having a bad hair day.
So you can't just be a weird, awkward teenager anymore. You trip in the cafeteria and it's a meme on the school gossip page by lunch.
Exactly. It creates a hostile environment. You're always performing, always guarding yourself. And that leads us to the Texas case study in our notes, which I think is one of the most important pieces of data we have.
This was the survey they did after a total ban was put in place, right?
Yes. They surveyed the students. Now, the assumption was the kids would be furious. You took our freedom away. This is a prison, all that.
Yeah, you'd expect a revolt.
But the results were totally counterintuitive.
Yeah.
The bans actually encouraged more class participation.
Because they weren't distracted.
That was part of it. But the students specifically said they felt less anxious about making mistakes.
Huh?
Think about it. If you raise your hand to answer a question and you get it wrong, in 2024, someone might secretly film that, zoom in on your face, post it. But now, with the phones locked away, you just got the answer wrong. That's it. It stays in the room.
That is, wow. That's kind of heartbreaking, actually. They were being held hostage by the potential of being recorded.
They were censoring their own learning. And the ban set them free, in a way. It shifted the focus from how do I look to what am I learning? It gave them permission to be messy and imperfect again.
So we have this almost utopian vision here. Kids are talking, they're not being filmed, they're focusing. But we have to pivot back to that 44% number. The parents who say, no, I need them to have that device.
The safety gap.
Right. Because for the last, 15 years, the smartphone has been the digital umbilical cord.
That's a perfect way to put it. It's the tool for logistics. I'm here to pick you up. Traffic's bad. Forgot my gym bag.
And for check-ins, sure. But mostly, it's for that vague sense of emergency readiness.
And when you sever that cord,
you create a void.
You do. And for the average family, that void is an inconvenience. You go back to, writing notes, trusting the school office.
Yeah.
But for a specific group of families, those with children with special needs, particularly autism, that void isn't just inconvenient.
It's terrifying.
Exactly.
The material we have went really deep into this. Can you break it down? Why does a phone ban hit a family with an autistic child so much harder?
It generally comes down to two major factors, routine and flight risk.
Okay, let's take those one by one. Routine.
Many autistic students rely so heavily on predictable structures. They need to know what's happening next to feel safe. And the phone often serves as a regulator for them.
Like a comfort object.
Yeah, or a way to decompress with music, or a communication tool if they're nonverbal. So if a school staffer suddenly just takes that device away because of a new policy...
It's not just breaking a rule.
No. It can trigger a full-blown meltdown.
Yeah.
You're disrupting their entire coping mechanism. You've removed their anchor.
I can see how that would be a nightmare. Okay, what about the second factor? You said flight risk.
The clinical term is eloping.
Which always sounds like they're running off to get married in Vegas.
Yeah.
But it's much more serious.
Much more. Eloping is when a child wanders or runs away from a safe environment, often impulsively. A kid might get overwhelmed by a fire drill and just run. They wander out an open gate. If you're a parent of a child who does that, the idea of them being at school, unreachable and untrackable, it's a non-starter.
Because if they wander into the woods or traffic, that phone's GPS is the only way you find them.
Exactly. For these parents, the phone isn't about TikTok, it's a life preserver.
So we have a stalemate. Educators are saying we need focus and privacy, and parents are saying we need access and safety. How do we navigate this? Is it a zero-sum game?
Fortunately, no. The good news is these policies are rarely as black and white as the headlines make them seem.
Mm-hmm.
Most bans have valid exemptions, and this is key, parents have to be proactive.
You can't just assume the school knows. So what counts as a valid exemption?
The most common ones are for monitoring medical conditions. For example, a diabetic child who uses a phone app with a glucose monitor. That's almost always allowed. Then you have translation services for ESL students. And then specific safety needs that are documented in their educational plans.
So there is wiggle room, but how official does it need to be? Can I just write a note saying, my kid needs his phone because he gets anxious?
Usually, no. A handwritten note isn't going to cut it. It varies wildly by state.
Yeah.
Our sources say in Ohio, some districts might require a doctor's note. But in New York State, device access often has to be written specifically into an IEP or a 504 plan.
Okay, we need to pause there. We hear those acronyms all the time, IEP and 504. For anyone listening who doesn't have a background in special ed, what's the difference?
Sure. An IEP is an individualized education program. It's a legal document for students who need specialized instruction. The curriculum itself is modified for them.
So they're learning different material.
Right. A 504 plan is different. It comes from civil rights law. It's about access. The student learns the same stuff, but they need accommodations to get to it, like extra time on tests, or in this case, having access to a device for their safety.
Got it. So an IEP changes what you learn. A 504 changes how you access it.
Roughly speaking, yes. And getting a phone written into those documents makes it a legal right. It stops being a favor and becomes a federally protected accommodation.
That sounds like a lot of paperwork.
It is. But it's necessary paperwork. However, there's a piece of advice here from the experts that applies to everyone, not just special needs families.
And that is?
The conversation you have with your child.
Yeah.
If they think the phone is being taken away because they're bad, that creates anxiety.
You have to frame the ban.
Yes. Parents need to explain. This is a rule for everyone. It is not a punishment. The school wants you to talk to your friends. That simple reframing can manage a lot of the stress.
Okay, so we have exemptions, we have legal pathways, but let's play devil's advocate. What if the school says no? Or what if your child needs safety monitoring but doesn't qualify for a medical exemption?
This is where we move away from the smartphone versus no phone binary. There's a third category emerging.
The middle ground.
The technological middle ground. The sources highlight assistive technology as the solution here. AngelSense is the main example they give because it's described as a school-approved alternative.
So how is that different from just giving my kid an iPhone with parental controls? I mean, kids are smart. They find ways around those.
It's a hardware difference, not just software. A locked iPhone still looks like a phone. It has screen, a camera lens. Teachers still have to police it. AngelSense and devices like it are unbundled.
Unbundled. I like that word.
It's perfect for it. They strip away the features schools hate. There's no screen for browsing, no games. And crucially, going back to that Texas high school, there is no camera.
Ah, so it solves the privacy issue instantly. You can bring it into a locker room.
Exactly. You can wear it without violating anyone's privacy because it literally cannot take pictures.
Yeah.
But it does have the safety features parents want. It has AI-enhanced GPS tracking, an SOS button, and this feature called auto pickup speakerphone.
Auto pickup. That sounds intense. Does that mean I can just listen in on the classroom? Because I feel like teachers would hate that.
No, and that's a really important distinction. It's not a spy tool. The parent can call in during an emergency, and it answers automatically. Think about that child with autism we discussed.
Right.
If they're overwhelmed, shutting down, maybe nonverbal, they can't swipe a screen to answer a call. They might not even register that it's ringing.
Right, they can't perform that task.
With auto pickup, the parent's voice just appears. They can speak immediately to offer comfort. Mom is here. Take a deep breath. It allows for de-escalation without friction.
That's a huge distinction, but I have to ask, and I know our listeners are thinking this, why do I need a special device for this? Why not just stick an AirTag in their backpack? They're cheap.
That is the most common misconception. It comes down to how the technology works. An AirTag is a Bluetooth tracker. It's designed to find your keys in the couch.
It finds things.
It finds things if they're near another iPhone. An AirTag has no GPS, no cellular connection. It relies on pinging off other people's Apple devices. So if a child elopes and runs into a wooded area behind the school,
and there's no one else around with an iPhone,
the AirTag goes dark. You have no data. A device like AngelSense has its own cellular connection and GPS chip. It talks directly to satellites. It works anywhere a phone would work.
That's a critical difference. It's where is my backpack versus is my child safe?
Exactly. It's reliability versus convenience. Plus, you can't talk through an AirTag. You can't soothe a panicked child.
So because these assistive devices are silent, no beeping, no camera, schools are generally okay with them.
Yes. They fall under the medical and safety exemption, not the entertainment ban. They're discreet. They don't disrupt the classroom. They solve the safety gap without reopening the distraction gap.
It's really interesting when you step back. We spent a decade stuffing as many features as possible into our pockets. Yeah. Camera, GPS, internet, everything. And now, to solve the problems it caused, we are stripping them back down.
We're seeing the value in single-purpose devices again.
It feels like we're finally mature enough to ask, just because a device can do everything, should it?
That is the core question. If we look at all this information, we're seeing a tension between two powerful forces. On one side, you've got the distraction economy, social media, infinite scroll. Schools are reacting to that.
And on the other side, the safety imperative. Parents need to know their kids are okay.
And the bans are a blunt instrument. They kill the distraction, but they accidentally hit the safety too.
Collateral damage.
Right. But technology is evolving to solve that. Whether it's through policy exemptions like IEPs or these dedicated devices, we're learning to separate communication from entertainment.
It's a fundamental change in how we view the role of tech in development. It's no longer just give them a screen and hope for the best.
And that's relevant for everyone listening. Whether you're a parent, an educator, or just watching culture, we're acknowledging that the all-in-one device might have been a mistake for the developing brain.
It makes you wonder, we're talking about schools today, but where else does this go?
Well, that raises a provocative question to leave with. As schools strip away smartphones to improve focus, and we see devices that do less but do it better, are we witnessing the beginning of a new era where dumb devices make a comeback?
Not because they're retro or hipster.
No, but because by doing less, they allow us to be more human. They allow those students in Texas to look at each other instead of a screen. They allow a parent to protect their child without addicting them to an algorithm.
That is a fascinating thought. Maybe the future isn't about more features, but about the right features.
I think that's exactly where we're heading, from quantity of connection to quality of presence.
Well, on that note, we are going to wrap up this deep dive. Whether you're team band, team phone, or somewhere in the middle, we hope this gave you some clarity on the biggest shift in education this decade.
Absolutely. Stay curious and stay connected in the right ways.
Thanks for listening. We'll catch you on the next deep dive.